Greetings, everyone, and welcome to this episode of On the Agenda podcast with Associated School Boards of South Dakota. My name is Heath Larson, Executive Director, and I'm pleased to have with us today Wendy Semler, the Deputy Secretary at the Department of Revenue for the state of South Dakota, and Mike Houdyshell, the Secretary for the Department of Revenue. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heath.
It's great to have you guys with us. And one of the things we wanted to do, and we know that property taxes was a discussion. We had the task force last summer that met, and then we had a busy session with property tax discussion. And both of you are experts in this area, in this field for the state of South Dakota. So really appreciate you joining us. And just want to talk through a couple of the bills that we would like your input on and some feedback on, and just to kind of talk through and maybe clarify, provide some information to all of our school board members out there, our school superintendents and business managers as well. So we'll start off, and Wendy, I think you're going to take this one, but let's talk a little bit about from the 2025 session, Senate Bill 216, and those implications and some of that, and how that bill will work for schools.
All right, yeah. So in 2025, as you said, Senate Bill 216 was passed. And this was a first step with a three-prong approach on providing some relief or some at least relieve some of the pressure off of the owner-occupied property owners. The first prong was a valuation restriction mechanism. And what it stated was that the total countywide owner-occupied valuation could not increase more than 3% in the previous year. So it wasn't an individual increase, it was just on a countywide basis. So the and I'll go into a little bit more of that here in a bit, but the secondary piece was a budgetary limitation, which that was restricting the taxing districts in their property tax limitation calculation from year to year. So most of the taxing districts, school districts are a little bit different, but most of the taxing districts are limited what they can ask for by what they got in the previous year, plus a growth factor and a index factor, what we a lot of times call CPI. Right. And what it was previously is the CPI was limited to 3%, couldn't be anything more than that, but the growth factor could be whatever the growth factor is. And the growth, when I speak about that, I'm talking about just the new construction, the new valuation coming on the books. So what Senate Bill 216 did was it put a maximum limitation on that growth factor as well. So CPI couldn't be any greater than 3 already, and now growth can't be any greater than 3. And then the third prong that SB 216 hit on was it did some updates to the assessment freeze qualification, and particularly the income thresholds and the valuation of the property threshold. Both of those were increased pretty significantly. So that was the three approaches that happened. So let's talk about each one of those prongs a little bit more in depth. So with the valuation piece, the assessor must still value all the homes at full market value. So that's where I was saying that it may not be an individual limitation or restriction on your property. Maybe you will have to go up. You're in a more desirable neighborhood. You might go up a little bit more than that, but and mine won't. But it's so they still are doing their job as normal. But once they have all of the value set, we did an analysis and check to see how much did you increase your values and was it greater than 3%? And if it was greater than 3% on its total owner-occupied value in the county, then we at the Department of Revenue calculated a what we were calling a reduction factor that would be applied on all owner-occupied so that everyone was being treated fairly and equitably. So that valuation restriction was seen on the assessment notices that went out this March. So that was the first time that that was that being seen. The what individual taxpayers are seeing on their tax bill is, if applicable, the reduced from 216 valuation. Those values will be used to calculate the tax bills in 2027. So that's the valuation piece. the school districts, how it will play into them. The valuations aren't going down. The valuations are still increasing, so there won't really be any impact to the school districts. It's just that rather than if it was a high hot market area, they may not just be increasing as fast as they might otherwise, but all valuations are still going up. Ag land is still being assessed, however that is, through the productivity formula, whatever the impacts are there. The other non-ag, a lot of times we call that just commercial. That property valuation will go up exactly as the market dictates. It's just the owner occupied that was being restricted a little bit, to try to, provide some relief to the property owners. So I'm going to jump to the third prong. And then we'll come back to the budgetary piece. So the third prong, again, the assessment freeze valuation, excuse me, not, yeah, valuation and income thresholds were increased. That was is being seen on for the first time in this year's application. So that has an application deadline of April 1st every year. And so April 1, 2026 is the first time we're seeing those increases. So it'll be interesting to see, just the metrics on how the increase of the usage of the program. And so again, that isn't going to necessarily impact school districts directly. The valuation, yeah, the if the properties, if there's more properties that are getting that program, yes, there, I mean, on its face, in theory, there'll be impact, but because there's so much more property being, that will probably just be absorbed by other taxpayers, is what I'm saying. The school district itself likely won't see any impact at all, even if there is an increase in that program. Again, the first time that those increases are being seen is in the 26 application for the tax bills in 2027. So let's go to the budgetary limitation, because that one is the one that has a little bit more impact on school districts. So as I mentioned, the school dis taxing districts are restricted for what they can ask for in taxes. For school districts, this comes into play only on the capital outlay fund. The capital outlay fund, every school district falls into one of three buckets. One of the buckets is what we call a growth plus 3% limitation, and the other two buckets are a per student. So Senate Bill 216 is not going to affect anyone in the per student buckets, because the per student buckets are strictly that. It's a dollar, a set dollar amount, depending on which one of them that you fall in to, times your number of students, voila. But if you fall into that growth plus 3% bucket, you may see a restriction in the calculation under Senate Bill 216. Because if you are in a high growth area and you typically see a growth that is higher than 3%, your calculation is going to be restricted to the 3% on the growth. So really, if you're in a high growth area, you will still be able to increase probably a maximum of 6%, 3% from growth, 3% from C or from the other factor. So you'll probably still see, that the worst case scenario for those high growth is a 6% increase. Again, the reasoning behind this is that, the budgets is what drives the property taxes in general. And so this was the mechanism put into place so that to try to help mitigate those larger increases. And so for school districts, the capital outlay is where they will feel potentially any of the impact on this.
And Wendy, just to jump in here real quick. So I remember when we were having this discussion back in 2025 in the 100th legislative session, I was having some communication, of course, and some of those areas, maybe it was that Lincoln Minnehaha area, certain areas maybe out west that are seeing some of that higher growth. And so to your point, the 3% cap and capital outlay, so and then I just want to make sure we're getting this correct. So if you're in that growth plus 3% category for the capital outlay fund and you're not in the per student scenario for capital outlay, you're saying it's likely that you would reap up to about 6% would about be your cap. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yep. So the 6% increase from what you were able to get last year in that calculation.
Okay. Yeah, very good. I appreciate that clarification, because I think at the end, that's from a school district perspective, when they're doing their budgeting components, those are the things they're going to be looking at from that standpoint. So I appreciate your clarification on that.
And Heath, if I could just add one thing there, and Wendy, I apologize if you already mentioned this, but the first two prongs that Wendy talked about, the valuation cap and then the second one, the growth cap, that's only for a 5-year period. These are
Yes, thank you for thank you.
temporary restrictions. So Pay 27 is the first year that we're seeing. The limitations go into effect under 216, but they are only for the next 5 tax years.
Yep, the
Yeah,
first
thanks for
year.
clarifying that, Mike. I remember when we were talking about 216, I brought up, well, maybe we can walk that back a couple more years, and maybe we can make it 3 years instead of 5 years. But yeah, thanks for clarifying that. It's for taxes payable 27 and through 31. Is that correct?
That is correct. Thank you, Mike, for clarifying that because I had it in my mind to say and I didn't get it out. So,
Well, what else on Senate Bill 216 do you think would be valuable for our school board members, superintendents, business officials, anyone out there interested in this? Is there anything else with 216 that you'd like to clarify or maybe bring up?
you just kind of touched on it. The only thing I was going to say is that. With the timing of the property tax cycle, all of those mechanisms aren't going to be seen really in full effect, at least to a taxpayer standpoint, until taxes payable in 2027, which we just kind of said about the with the 5-year limit or the 5-year term that we have with this. So I know that there was a lot of questions on in from taxpayers of like when will this be impacting us. Again, all mechanisms will be fully in place for that Pay 27. So then for school districts doing their budgeting, when they're looking at their budget today, this year, in the next couple of months, whatever, whenever they're doing that, they will be seeing that they're with their capital outlay. If they're in a higher growth area, they should expect they'll be limited to 3%, basically. So that will be hitting the books this year as they look at their budget for next year.
So FY27, which is what school districts will be planning for. So they're in the process now of finishing a year strong, which is FY26, planning for next year, which will be FY27, which would start July 1 for the school districts, of course. So you're saying, Wendy, this Senate Bill 216 in those high growth areas, this will impact them in budgeting, and they need to be aware of this for FY27 and their upcoming next fiscal year.
Correct, correct.
Very good. All right. Anything else with 216, or should we get into 96?
Was gonna say, I think that's everything I had for 216, unless Mike thinks I missed anything.
Nope, I think we're good.
All right, Mike, if you could, let's dive into Senate Bill 96, and if you could talk a little bit about that. That was Governor Roden's plan this year that I believe he came out with fairly early on and talked a little bit about on the county option side of things. So if you would, just share with us what we should know about that.
Sure. Yeah. No. Thanks, Heath. Yeah. Senate Bill 96 was the governor's homeowner property tax relief plan that really started to be kind of talked about in earnest at the end of last session. Kind of the last week or so internally, we started to think about okay, what's kind of the next step? Because as Wendy mentioned, Senate Bill 216, Governor Roden acknowledged. All along that this is kind of the first step. This is kind of a let's stop the bleeding and try to find something for some temporary relief for homeowners. But he acknowledged at the time that this was not the end of the discussion, and we all knew that the 26th session was going to be heavily focused on finding a way to provide permanent long-term property tax relief for homeowners. So we started to look at different options, and the idea that kind of came to the top of the heap, so to speak, was allowing counties to, at their discretion, impose a county sales tax, with the caveat that that sales tax had to 100% be devoted to owner-occupied property tax relief. So the idea wasn't to provide new additional revenue to county governments so that they could spend on other programs or new programs, existing programs, that type of thing, but it had to directly go to lower owner-occupied property taxes. So basically, it was an alternative revenue source for county governments that now are very reliant on property taxes to fund county services. Up to this point, counties have never had the ability to impose sales taxes in South Dakota. Municipalities have had the ability to have sales taxes for many decades. And of course, municipalities use sales tax revenues to supplement their budgets along with property taxes. This is kind of a new thing for counties. And what the bill does is it allows county boards of commissioners to, by ordinance, impose county sales tax up to a half a percent. It could be lower than a half a percent if the county decides that they don't need the full half a percent to provide the relief that they want for their homeowners. But it's up to a half a percent, and the money has to go into a dedicated fund at the county level. And again, like I already mentioned, that money has to be used to lower owner-occupied property taxes, the county portion of owner-occupied property taxes. As far as how the tax works kind of mechanically, it is set up identically to the municipal sales tax. So the Department of Revenue will administer the county sales tax just like we administer the municipal sales tax, meaning that, taxpayers remit the taxes to the Department of Revenue. And then we would turn around and send that money to the appropriate county where that tax was collected, and that county would have to put the revenue into that new fund to provide owner-occupied tax relief. The earliest that a county could do this, based on just kind of the timing in the bill and the various notice requirements, would be January 1 of 2027. So the bill goes into effect on July 1 of this year. At that time, a county would be able to bring forward an ordinance imposing this new tax. If the ordinance were to pass, or if it was referred to a vote and passed at an election, then the county would have to provide at least 90 days notice to the department that, hey, we are going to do this. And then the tax would go into effect. Based on all of those notice requirements and the timing, the earliest this could happen would be January 1 of 2027. And so at that time, if you were in a county that opted to do this, then on any purchase that you make of goods and services within the county, you would pay that additional up to a half percent sales tax that would go to lower owner-occupied property taxes.
And Mike, that's a you're saying that is a it's a dedicated fund that must be attributed to owner-occupied property tax. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Oh, we did a lot of different scenarios to estimate how much revenue we think this would generate on a county by county basis. And there are many counties that, based on our estimates, they could entirely eliminate county property taxes on owner-occupied property and still have money remaining in the fund. So the bill speaks to that situation as well, where it says if 100% of the county owner-occupied taxes are satisfied by this new revenue source, then any remaining money has to be used to lower agricultural and commercial property taxes in an equal proportioned manner. So Again, if they have extra money in the fund, they can't just use that money for other purposes. It still has to go to property tax relief just for the other classes of property.
So from a K-12 school district perspective and Senate Bill 96, so specifically how it impact our school boards and our school districts across the state, what kind of implications or impacts would you say would be felt with Senate Bill 96? Do you see anything there that you feel would be worth noting for us?
Sure. I don't think that there's any direct impacts, right? This is focused just on the county property tax levy, and it's a means to help provide county government services. So there really isn't a direct impact on the schools. Now, having said that, I do think that there's an indirect benefit to the schools, where this helps take some pressure out of the system, right? We have heard for the last several years that owner-occupied property taxes, especially in our high-growth counties, are, getting untenable. There's a lot of angst out there amongst homeowners, like in the Black Hills counties, in Minnehaha, Lincoln County in particular. That's where we're hearing a lot of the complaints and where the legislature was getting, getting a lot of complaints from their constituents to do something on this issue. And although it doesn't directly impact the school districts, I think anything to help take pressure out of the property tax system, by doing something even on the county levy, I think ultimately helps school districts as well too. Because, Heath, you were, around during session and were a part of the discussions. What did we hear from a lot of the legislators? They didn't want to fix the problem by finding alternative revenue sources. They wanted cuts, and not just county government cuts, but school district cuts and city cuts and all taxing district cuts. And, I think anything that we can do to help out the property owners, the homeowners here, through, Senate Bill 96 is hopefully going to, kind of mute some of those discussions about we need to cut, because this provides a way to provide property tax relief by finding another revenue source for the counties, but also maintains the same level of county services that people expect.
Absolutely. One of the, we had 36 bills of opposition this year at Associated School Boards. That's a pretty good number of bills. Thankfully, we're fortunate to be successful in all but two of those. One of the things I talked about a little bit, and I think we have even talked a little bit about, is in 2026, the overall tax competitiveness that Tax Foundation has South Dakota, the state of South Dakota, ranked number two in all of the United States. And I thought that was a pretty impressive number and ranking to be able to share with South Dakotans as well, as far as, hey, you know what? We have a pretty good thing going from a tax competitiveness perspective in this state. And to be number two, Wyoming was number one. And I think we all know, and or maybe we realize they have a pretty good chunk of revenue coming from natural resources as well, that maybe we don't quite have that amount of revenue with that. So in South Dakota, I mean, at the end of the day, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but we have sales tax and we have property tax, and that's primarily the generations of revenue that we have. Would that be fair to say, or what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we don't have a personal or corporate income tax. We are very reliant on, sales tax and property tax. At the state level, our primary revenue source is the state sales tax. The state does not collect or spend any property tax dollars. That's something that I think, gets lost in the fray sometimes, and a lot of people don't understand is all of those property tax dollars that you pay on your property are staying local to provide local services. They're not going to the state. They're not going to the general fund. They're not going to fund the Department of Revenue and the other executive branch agencies. That is primarily funded by the sales tax, And then, of course, a couple other, larger revenue sources at the state level, the contractors' excise tax and the video lottery proceeds. Those are kind of the big three at the state level. When it comes to local government, the property tax is the main revenue source for all local governments. And when you talk about, counties, they are, probably the most reliant on property taxes. Because again, they don't have the ability, or they haven't up to this point, they don't have the ability to impose sales tax. Obviously, school districts, on their, in their general, operations, it's a mixture where they're relying on, local effort through property taxes, but also, through the state aid payments, which are generally sales tax revenues collected at the state level. But yeah, to your point, that's really, the two main drivers of revenue in the state are the property tax and the sales tax. And that's where, from my perspective and, the years that I've been involved in this, that it kind of sort of makes it difficult to come up with good solutions to, the property tax question, because we just don't have a lot of other revenue sources in South Dakota. And that's where I think Senate Bill 96 was definitely an outside the box approach, where, we recognize that, look, we have got to find an alternative revenue stream for counties, so they can lower the property tax burden on homeowners, and the sales tax is the most logical place to go to do so.
Right. Thank you. Appreciate your comments on that. Anything else you think, Secretary, with Senate Bill 96 that we should know before we move into Senate Bill 245 and then the state aid bill, which is House Bill 1051?
Yeah, the only thing I would say on that, again, I just want to stress that this is optional. It's really up to your local county commissioners to decide whether or not this is a good option for your county. I think that there are a handful of counties that will probably want to do this right away because it makes sense for them. The Black Hills counties, Minnehaha, Lincoln County, where, they have a lot of economic activity, but they also have a lot of visitor spending too. That's kind of part of this discussion, right? Is we can provide some property tax relief, funded by people that don't necessarily live in that community, but also, they're using county services when they're in those counties. They just are.
Kind of the concept of taxing the tourists, so to speak.
Absolutely, right. Yep, not necessarily even residents of South Dakota. So that's, something that's appealing about it. But I wouldn't be surprised if, a lot of counties don't decide to do this, because that's the one thing that, we really, tried to educate the legislature on this year is, there are a lot of counties where they just don't have the same type of pressure on the property tax system, and they're not hearing the same types of complaints that they're hearing in other parts of the state. So, you know what? If this doesn't make sense in, Haakon County, Haakon County is probably not going to do this. So, again, it's a tool. It's optional. It will provide, pretty meaningful relief based on the estimates that we've looked at. Maybe just a little plug. If you go out to the governor's homepage on the state website, you can actually look at a map of every county and get an estimate of what type of relief that this would provide. So it is substantial. It's not insignificant amount of money, if your county decides to do this.
Thanks for sharing that. I appreciate that greatly, and hopefully that's a good kind of rundown and summary too of the bill and some options with that. And I'm glad you mentioned it's an option, right? So we talk a lot about local control, and certainly in the role I have at Associated School Boards, and I know even like with the municipalities, the counties, all of those folks in local government, we talk a lot about local control and having that ability to, your publicly elected officials locally making decisions that are best for them, and government closest to its people is the best form of government. So I think that's another thing that really resonates well with that bill too, is the local control authority piece of that. Well, let's roll into Let's roll into Senate Bill 245 and House Bill 1051, which have some direct, certainly, impacts on school districts. Just as 1051 is a state aid funding bill, and then Senate Bill 245 has some potential impacts there as well. Wendy, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely.
All right.
So 245 is working kind of in conjunction with 1051, which I'll get to. But really, what the big thing with Senate Bill 245 this year is that the state is increasing its share of the education funding. And that will result in a considerable decrease to the school general levy for the owner-occupied property. So the beauty about Senate Bill 245 is this will be applied to all homeowners statewide. Senate Bill 96, as Mike just mentioned, is a local option or local opt-in. And so that is going to depend on a local decision of the commissioners. So only people in those counties will be impacted. But 245, all homeowners are going to feel the impact of this. So what the couple of different things to keep in mind here with Senate Bill 245 is that right now, there is a sales tax reduction in place. So our sales tax is technically set at 4.5%. However, a couple of years ago, if you recall, the legislature did a reduction in that sales tax for a period of time, and it is rolled it back to 4.2%. So we are currently living under a 4.2% sales tax world, but starting in 2027, that's the sunset of that reduction comes off, and it will be going back to the 4.5%. So what Senate Bill 245 does is says, hey, we know that that sunset's coming off and we are going to be getting 0.3% more in sales tax again here soon. Let's dedicate all of that revenue from that, what we know is going to be that 0.3% increase in sales tax, dedicate all of that revenue in buying down the owner-occupied levy for school general fund. We're going to pump that all into property tax relief fund, which will then go towards state aid payments for school districts. So they're dedicating all of that expected revenue going forward. But to provide some immediate relief, because if we waited until the sunset, then you're not going to see that here until pay 28. Instead, what they're saying that what the legislature decided was we want to provide immediate relief as soon as possible, which would be for the pay 27 tax year. So they dedicated $55 million to get pumped into the system right now to buy down those levies right away. And that's where House Bill 1051 comes into play. If that is our the House Bill, every year we have a state aid education funding bill. The number changes every year, but it's always the same thing. And it's always setting the school general levies and setting the special ed max levy. So House Bill 1051 is this year's version of that. And if you look at it, you will see that the owner-occupied levy was like, oh, I'm drawing a blank on what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be in the $2 range, but once the idea of Senate Bill 245 came in and said, hey, we're going to pump in this $55 million, that levy for owner-occupied is now going to be around 67 cents. And so that is a considerable reduction. I mean, that's going to be a huge win for homeowners across the state. And so they will see that on their tax bill. So I shouldn't say they should see it on their tax bill. They will feel it in their tax bill. And the reason why I mean, they'll still see it. It will show that the owner-occupied levy in most school districts is going to be point, the 0.66, whatever it was set at. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a little bit of a
I think it's
blank.
0.669
There we go.
percent. Yeah.
So they're going to see that, but it will be an automatic thing. And their calculation. And the reason why I kind of stumbled over that a little bit is because with Senate Bill 96, they'll see the actual tax credit. It will say a tax credit because of 96 if it applies. This won't be quite as apparent because it's going to be under the same calculation as it currently is, but they will see that the amount of taxes is going to be a significant reduction. So yeah,
I think it was like $168 per 100,000 or something like that. I mean, so yeah, I mean, if your average homeowner, they're going to see, a few $100 reduction in their tax bill because of lowering that levy significantly.
yep.
So on the when the sales tax went down to 4.2%, was the number of lost revenue per se, I think we can call it lost revenue, we'll just say a revenue reduction, was it around $110 million, roughly, that 0.3?
Yeah, at the time it was about 110 million is what our estimates were. I think today, based on growth and some inflation, we're looking at about 114 million is the number that they were talking about during session. So we anticipate that it'll be somewhere in that probably 114, 15, 16 million dollar range once the rate goes back up.
So for K-12 school districts, I think one of the challenges or concerns that we had was looking at from so local effort decreases, state aid share then will increase. And the concern or challenge may be, well, what happens when if that state share happens to lag because of it's a down year? Maybe we're in a recession. The state part of that, money or revenue isn't there to fund the schools. And then we're talking about potentially, opt-outs. As we mentioned before, we can, you can opt out of that general fund scenario and out of capital outlay for that matter. But I think on the bill part of it, I think for our school districts, that's where some of that concern came in, and we realize it's a balancing act amongst, getting some property tax relief for folks, which was certainly a part of it. Do you guys have any concerns, or what are your thoughts on that side of it? Because local effort's going to decrease with this bill, the state aid share is going to increase, and maybe a better question or thought would be, how do you envision, or what will that share percentage differentiate to? Could you share, or what are your thoughts there?
And I will kind of defer to Mike on the percentage share thing, but I do just kind of want to address your first question there. So with the state dedicating, an increase in the state aid, I believe the intent is that won't change. Like, since we are, hitching our horse to that will continue on. If there is a situation where there's a down year, I would say that, or where I don't think that would change necessarily. I feel like we have dedicated that, and maybe I'm misspeaking, and Mike can and maybe knows a little bit more of the stuff happening behind the curtain, but I think that at the end of the day, if not so, I guess where I'm kind of approaching it is, if values were to decrease locally, then the because that levy is looked at every single year. Those max levies are looked at every single year, so they'll be addressed every year on whether or not there needs to be any tweaks there. But to my understanding, and I will kick it over to Mike here shortly in 2 seconds, is that the state portion is going to is changed now, but I don't know what that percentage is. And like I said, Mike, you can clean up if I misspoke on anything there.
No, it's a really good question, and it's kind of one of those deals where they're even today, right, under the current split, and I think it's around 60-40, 60% from state aid, 40% local effort, somewhere around there. And there's always that risk, right? If we have a little bit of a downturn in the economy, how does that impact the schools? How does that impact that total need calculation that's made by the legislature, every year pursuant to state law, and how are we going to pay for it? Here, and I think where you're going with this, Heath, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Now, even more of the total need has shifted to the state. And to the extent that there's risk of a downturn in our sales tax revenue, that is, ultimately, that risk, where's the risk lie? Does it lie with the state general fund, where the legislature in future years, if there is a downturn, will have to find the money somewhere, at the expense of other, things in state government? Or does it shift to the local effort side, where now those levies that have been dropped significantly would have to be increased? So we're not, we're not going backwards on the total need, that the schools need to fund their operations. I guess we'll just have to see how it plays out. I think what I heard from, Speaker Hansen, who it was his bill. I think his comments were, he envisions, that we're going to continue to, our economy is going to continue to grow. I hope that's, and that's what we all hope for, right? Is that we are going to continue to grow, as a state and year over year. And so, ideally, the state's going to continue to be able to afford to keep whatever that new percentage is, on the state aid side. I think I saw something where, we're going from like six or the 60, I think it's getting close to 70%, like 67%, 68%, something like that with Senate Bill 248. So, I think that we have to be optimistic that we're going to continue to grow as a state. The revenues will continue to be at a level where we can continue to meet that obligation, because I think really, the purpose of it is that long-term property tax relief. 96 was doing it on a targeted basis for, maybe the more high growth areas. 245 is a statewide, plan, so everybody can benefit from, the increase in the sales tax, or going back to the 4.5%, I guess I should say more accurately. So everybody benefits from that. And, it'll be up to the legislature going forward to make sure that they're living up to that expectation that I think now has been set to provide that relief to the homeowners. Does that answer your question, Heath?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It does, because that was, I think, one of the concerns we had, with that scenario was, it is a burden shift to a degree, right? I mean, I think that's a reality and a fact that it is somewhat of a burden shift. And then for our K-12 schools to have the opportunity, certainly to, not fall back. We had the increase 1.25 last year, 1.4% this year to the state aid scenarios. So, they're going to be bleeding a little bit, and certainly to make sure we are funding them to that level so we can keep everything rolling forward in a positive manner. We learned last year, and we know, I think, every year that K-12 education, and people are pretty passionate about it in their local communities. And we're thankful for that. And I know both of you, just like most everyone in this state, really do have a important passion and want to make sure that our K-12 schools, and we have a good quality education system. And certainly appreciate the work, Secretary Howdy Shell and Deputy Secretary Semler, you do for us, and appreciate everything and all the thought and work that goes into it. I know I utilize your expertise and resources during legislative session quite a bit, so appreciate all the information that you provide. What did we miss today? What do we need to leave? What do we need to leave everyone with? You guys have anything?
Well, the only thing that I'll leave you with here, Heath, is I hope we have a, at least a 1 year moratorium on talking about property taxes at the Capitol. Although I'm very passionate about property taxes, and I love it. I hope that, both, Senate Bill 96, 245, will, kind of calm the waters down on that issue, and we can maybe turn our focus to some other things. I think that they're a big step forward. I mean, There are, just kind of looking at my own personal situation, Heath. I own a house here in Pierre, and Hughes County goes ahead and puts a half cent sales tax in place, and I get a lower levy for the school district. I mean, I'm going to save like $1,400 personally. I mean, that's a big deal. I mean, that's a lot of money. And so I think that the legislature listened to the taxpayers and came up with a path forward to provide meaningful property tax relief without cutting funding for government services. And I think that that's a big win in my view. But maybe we could just take at least a 1 year break from talking about it.
I wouldn't mind that myself. I think we had approximately, in some way, shape, or form, there were about 50 property tax or property tax related bills this session in 2026. So, and we were engaged in, we monitored a good chunk of those candidly, and then there were a couple that we got a little bit more engaged with. But yeah, about 50. So I'm sure, like you, I would be okay with a 1 year moratorium on that discussion as well. So,
I don't think
well,
we're
I
going to
really appreciate it,
get.
you guys, for taking the time to visit with us today. Again, this is On the Agenda podcast, and greatly appreciate the work you're all doing. And for all of us here at Associated School Boards, thank you. And thank you to all of our members. Thanks for joining us.